Hello, everybody. Welcome back into Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Saturday. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSaturday. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You can also follow our Locked On Suns page, Ben Array, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your Twitter is very much appreciated, as always. We have a fun episode for you guys next 2 days, over Friday and Monday. We're going to talk about not only the NBA standings for this year, our predictions, but also the awards, who's going to win MVP, who's going to win Defensive Player of the Year, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a fun next few episodes for you guys. It's going to be a little bit more general NBA talk, because I think, Brandon, I mean, we've talked about it a lot off the air. I think we've kind of covered this offseason from the Suns from literally every angle possible.
Yeah, we sure have. And I think, you know, this will get us through some of the last few days before media day and then training camp. And then from then on, we'll have a bunch of new stuff to talk about. But for now, I think we've kind of hit everything. We'll hopefully have some guests to close out September next week and kind of put a bow on everything from a season preview, sort of off-season recap perspective. And then, as you guys know, we're right around the corner from the meat of basketball starting back up. So that's very exciting. But we wanted to talk about the NBA a little bit because obviously all of us who follow the Suns or are fans of the Suns or care about the Suns at all about the NBA too. So let's do you want to start with the West? Do the West standings here first. Who do you have? The top seed here is pretty interesting, I think. I mean, the team who we would always pencil in, the Warriors, are not the same team anymore.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm looking over the West. It's really clear to me, just looking quickly at the West and the East, just how much better the West is this year than the East. Just the first like 6-7 teams in this list here could be like playoff contenders, like legit playoff contenders that catch fire at the right time, maybe even title contenders too. Like, it's a loaded Western Conference this year. But for me, as the top seed, I think we might be on the same page here, Brandon, because we kind of alluded to it throughout the year. Like, an underrated guy could really take a leap this year. I have the Denver Nuggets in my one seed. What about you?
Yeah, same here. I mean, I don't know if they'll be the best team, the team I would pick to come out of the West come playoff time. But as we get through, I'll list some of my concerns with the other teams. But just from a Nuggets perspective here, like, the continuity is huge. And I really think, you know, Zach Lowe has been on it quite a bit. I know a lot of other analysts have, especially the Nuggets and the Rockets, even though they are adding Russell Westbrook into Houston. Those two teams, I think, are going to have the infrastructure there to pick up where they left off, whereas others are really going to have an adjustment period bringing in huge stars. So the fact that the Nuggets have Nikola Jokic and mostly the same roster around him and were very good last year, I think they're really just going to keep trending in the right direction. If they get more out of guys like Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, we might be looking at a 60-win team if they can beat some of those tough Western Conference opponents.
Yeah, also the underrated acquisition, I think, of one of the top ones of the summer was Jeremy Grant. They just kind of swooped in from OKC and got him for not much at all, which surprised me a little bit there. But I think Jeremy Grant and Paul Millsap's a great 1-2 punch next to Nikola Jokic off the bench. And for Jokic himself, we're going to talk about him probably on Monday's show, but I think he's one of those underrated guys as far as MVP candidates go for this league, because I think he has a chance to take another leap this year. Michael Porter Jr. is the ultimate wild card here. If he's a good player for them, I think he could help them immensely. But I think the Nuggets, just the continuity aspect that you hit on there, Brennan, that's going to play a big factor as far as just the number one seed this year, because the Nuggets even last year were the number two seed and they didn't lose really anybody on that team. So I think continuity reigns supreme for the number one seed. But number two for me, it's going to actually back-to-back LA teams for 2 and 3, which is the Clippers at 2 and the Lakers at 3. But I think the only reason why neither of those teams are in the top number one seed is because I think load management is going to be a big thing for both those teams this year.
I do think load management's a part of it. I actually have the Clippers down at number 4 because I'm even more worried about them. Even forgetting load management, they have a guy who's already injured and will miss a little bit of time. Hasn't really been finalized how much time he is expected to miss in Paul George right at the beginning of the year from those shoulder issues that kind of ruined the end of the year for him and for the Thunder last season. So that going into this year, they're already down a guy. And yes, they will have to load manage him, and we can expect Kawhi Leonard will heavily rest throughout the year like he did with the Raptors. But the fact that they already have that injury worries me even more. So I have them down. I have the Lakers at 2. So I know the Lakers thing, everybody is happy to crap on how they built out their roster. I don't think it's perfect. I also don't think it's a finished product, right? They have Anthony Davis, as we can assume, for the foreseeable future and LeBron James for the rest of his contract. I don't think they felt pressure to finalize everything in year one here, but the way they did it, I don't think is too bad. And I really think they'll be competitive on a nightly basis. Two of however you want to do it, but two of the top 10 or so players in the league, like, that's incredible. You could even say top five, depending on how you feel about those two. That's a recipe for winning a whole ton of games. And I really just have a hard time looking past that. And the guys they filled it out with, I mean, they have Danny Green, Jared Dudley, you know, JaVale McGee. They have guys who can play regular season minutes and help you win.
Yeah, if you also talk to some Lakers fans, I was actually in LA for the NFL season opening weekend to go see the Colts play. As you guys know, I'm a Colts fan. I went to go watch them play against the Chargers. I drove by a mural that had LeBron and Anthony Davis on it, but also Kyle Kuzma, which kind of made me laugh a little bit. If you talk to Lakers fans, I think they assume he's like a franchise building block. But what's your opinion on Kyle Kuzma?
Yeah, I mean, I think this year is going to tell us a lot because they're actually going to be in a position to be winning on a nightly basis. I think he's going to have to change his game and really pick it up on defense and do things that young players don't often have to do. It's really going to tell us a lot about him. I think he's a good scorer. I think he's probably on a great team, like a bench piece or the third or fourth option in an offense who is really just like a specialty scorer. But I also think it's really early to say what he will be in his prime. So I'm excited to see what he can be and if he can kind of change his game around. Because, you know, a lot of people have said this, but like those guys all kind of play the same spot. They all operate kind of in that mid-range and in space. So how he sacrifices and changes to fit with not only LeBron but also Anthony Davis now is going to be interesting. But I mean, what do you think of what we've seen from him so far?
I'm really not that big of a fan of Kuzma. I think he's kind of like a Lou Williams kind of player. I know Lou's a good player, but I just think Kuzma is the bigger version of him, where he's just a scorer and nothing else. He's not a good defender. I think he's frankly really overhyped by Lakers fans, and I think for me personally, I just don't see how Kuzma is that huge of a building block. You know, I just feel like he's just a one-dimensional player, and I'm very worried if they do back at the Brinks truck. I feel like that might be happening in a couple years with Kuzma, and I think that might be a bad idea if the Lakers do that, because I just think he's a 1-2 player, to be honest.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I agree with you for now, and I think one area where he could just stand out and eventually become better than that is if he can become a dead-eye shooter, if he can really become an elite floor spacer at the forward spot. That's a valuable type of player to have. Still probably not a max player or anything like a lot of Lakers fans want him to be, but a valuable player nonetheless, especially with a team that's built the way theirs is. But I have the Rockets at 3. Where do you have Houston?
I actually have my 4 here, so we can just spend a few minutes on Houston if you want to. I have, as we just to run through it again real quick, I have the Nuggets, Clippers, and Lakers, and the Rockets at 4. And we just have them flip-flop there for our 3 and 4 spot, Brennan. What's your thoughts on Houston this year? Because I think James Harden could have an MVP type of year again, but I really don't think the points production is going to be there anymore now, especially with Russell Westbrook there.
Yeah, it's another thing for me, almost like I said with the Nuggets, and I mentioned Houston in the same kind of conversation with them, is I feel like they're going to be great in the regular season. I think that they've shown, yes, Russell Westbrook is coming in. Yes, he's a different type of player than Chris Paul. Maybe on paper, not an ideal fit like we all thought CP3 was, but still a guy I think who is proven in the regular season. And we're talking about standings here. We're not talking about who's playing in June. So it's my feeling that, you know, Eric Gordon, you know, they got Nene back. They have Clint Capella. They have that whole roster is pretty much intact. PJ Tucker is going to be just as valuable as ever. So yeah, they're going to have to feel it out, which is why I don't necessarily have them as a one seed like they've threatened to be the past few years, but I have them right on the cusp. So I just think they'll pick up where they left off last year, pretty similar. And then, you know, maybe they use the season to figure out how Russ fits. Maybe he never does fit. And then they're back to square one next summer. But in the regular season, I just think they've proven it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I think people are – I know I criticize them myself. Just Russell Westbrook is just an inefficient player now in this stage of his career. But I think it's fair to say, like, the upgrade from Chris Paul to Russell Westbrook is pretty huge.
Yeah, the defense will be a question. The defense is my biggest question. Chris Paul, the versatility he brought, the ability to switch like they did 2 seasons ago. Didn't do it so much last season, but still, I think, you know, he's proven himself to be a much more impactful and versatile defender than Russ has. So that'll be where I'm looking. There's only so much that PJ Tucker can do, and teams are able to play Clint Capela off the floor. So their defense is going to be an issue, even if their offense is still near the top of the league. I have the Jazz at five, which was really crazy to me because I really, really like them. I think they're probably still in this top group as far as teams that could compete for a championship, but crazy to put them at five with how much I like their roster.
Yeah, I'm actually on the same page as you here with Utah at five, and I think this is a big year, like a huge year for Donovan Mitchell, because I know he's not a really big person on Suns Twitter, so to say, in the Suns community with his quote-unquote rivalry here with Devin Booker, just from a fan standpoint. But I think this is a huge year. If Donovan Mitchell can take a leap this year, like another leap forward, which Booker showed like in year two, year three to year four, if he has that kind of leap for him, he's going to get paid a lot of money. I really think at this point in time, he's going to get the Devin Booker contract after this year, after his third season. He's going to get that early extension, probably a max contract from Utah. But I still have my doubts about Donovan Mitchell. I still have some legit questions about him as far as is he going to be taking that step forward? And this is with how they built the roster, Brennan, with bringing Bogdanovich in there. They brought in Ed Davis, the legit backup center. And you also have Rudy Gobert there as your anchor, and Mike Conley in a trade, which I thought was a big move for the summer for them. Probably one of the best moves of the summer, in my opinion, just because I'm so high on Conley and just to fit with Donovan Mitchell. It's all built around Mitchell now, and it's his time to kind of show up here.
It's definitely a better fit at point guard with Conley, and an overall better player, obviously, than Ricky Rubio as well. But they really have pivoted to having a little bit more of an offense identity. You know, they don't have Derek Favors, another traditional big there who's a solid defensive player and a good backup five. They don't have, you know, quite the depth of defensive talent that they are used to having. They're going to have Bogdanovich in there a lot, who's a good defender, but is going to be a different type of piece. So I'm interested. I think, you know, the offense, they need to be able to score with some of these teams because they've learned that Gobert is not going to be able to have necessarily the same elite level of impact against every opponent when they're game planning night to night. So I'm interested. I want to see, and I think it is a lot riding on Mitchell. I have the Warriors six, and I just believe in their system. I think Draymond Green's an amazing player. I think if he's in shape and attentive, which I think that whole team has to be entering the year. This is not a waltz into the finals type of season anymore. And I think if they bring it that way, that Green and Curry is, that's just, you can't expect that team to go out there and win 39, 40 games with that duo, even if Clay takes a while to come back. And then you add the D'Angelo Russell thing, which maybe it doesn't go well, but I have a hard time believing it just tanks their season. It might not be what they're hoping to replace Kevin Durant and add this new young dimension to their team. Maybe they don't keep him long term, but I really just think, you know, I have a hard time seeing how the bottom falls out from underneath these guys.
I'm right there with you as well, Brent. I have the Warriors at six, and I'm curious to just hear your thoughts on this because D'Angelo Russell, I think, will be around past the deadline because Clay won't be back until I think March. But what's your overall thoughts on how they're going to utilize like the playoff lineup there with the Warriors? Because I think it's going to be Steph at the one. Maybe you put D'Lo at the two, then Clay at the three, Draymond at the four. I feel it's going to be a super, like a small ball lineup, so to say, the entire year once Clay's back.
Yeah, I mean, and no, even maybe more importantly, once we think about playoffs and kind of how their lineups are going to function, no Iguodala and no Livingston now either with the news that he's retiring, which I think was expected even dating back to the middle of last season, but official now. So they're going to be a very different looking team. They don't have the wing depth. They lost their three best wings, and well, besides Clay, in KD, Iguodala, and Livingston now. So their team's going to function a lot differently. I think the offense really is going to have no issue, in my opinion. I think Russell, another guy that just in the regular season with his shooting and passing ability, is going to have no issue helping that offense along with Curry or without Curry. But yeah, I would say it's probably going to be those four guys, Clay defending threes, which he's done plenty throughout his career, and then probably Looney in that five spot, that fifth player. You know, they'll ripple through guys, and they got a little younger with their role players, but it's going to look different. I just think, you know, Curry's a top three player in my opinion, and Draymond's probably top 20, one of the absolute best defensive players I've ever watched, and I don't think he's falling off this year at least.
Closing out here, Brennan, with our 7 and 8 seeds, I think we're on the same page here as well with our 7 seed possibly, or maybe we're just having the playoffs themselves at the very bottom. I have 7 being the Portland Trailblazers. I think there's going to be some regression this year. I think there's always a team in the West that regresses. I think it's Portland this year, to be honest. I think the West got so much better that Portland didn't really do much for me to really move up or really stay where they were in the standings this year. I think they're at 7 overall. And then for me, I was very, very tempted at number 8 to put in Dallas or New Orleans. But until Greg Popovich tells me otherwise, I'm not betting against San Antonio. So San Antonio is my 8 seed there.
Yeah, so this is the hottest take I have probably in this whole show. It is that I think the Trailblazers, you just have to bet on somebody to miss. And I'm going to go with Portland here just to mix it up. It's really no disrespect to them. It is more so, as you said, a function of how much better all the other teams across the West, and I mean, yeah, really just the West. The East got worse, but I just don't see how Portland tracks with some of these other rosters. I think there's a limit to how much you can ask of one player in Damian Lillard. And even the strides we saw CJ McCollum take last playoffs, I think that can help him with, you know, the confidence he has. Maybe that dynamic even goes up a level between the two of them, but the roster around them is worse than it's been in a few years. You know, Yusuf Nurkic, it's not their fault he got injured, but they didn't do enough. I would probably have even liked it more if they just kept Cantor and didn't do the Whiteside thing. I have a hard time believing Whiteside makes them a better team. And the other guys are, it's weak. They, you know, they lost Aminu and Harkless, who were good for them and didn't really do much to replace it. So I'm going without them. I have Spurs Pelicans rounding out 7 and 8.
Oh, I like it. I like the Pelicans there. I had them as my 10 seed. And I think Dallas is a team to watch for as well. I think I had them at 9 as well. Just those two teams, just before we end this segment, Brennan, do you think those, with Zion and Luka in year two, do you think those two teams could really make a leap this year?
I think the Pelicans are even more likely. Dallas, I'm just a little worried about Kristaps' health. Not that I have any reason to think one way or the other. I just want to see him healthy because it's been such a long time and he's just such a physical, it's just a challenge to keep him upright, and I want to see it for a prolonged stretch before I buy it. So that's my only reason to be a little lower on the Mavericks here. And the Pelicans, I wrote about them for, sorry, it's actually going to go up in like almost over a week at this point, but just why I'm so excited to watch them. And the more I dug into it, the more I was just thrilled with how the veteran pieces they added will fit with this roster. It's really kind of underrated. We know that they went out and got veteran talent in J.J. Redick, Derek Favors, and then keeping Drew Holiday around, but I think we underestimated just how perfectly those pieces will slide in there. Derek Favors is about as good of a fit, maybe not the three-point threat, but everything else you want next to Zion Williamson. And then J.J. Redick, for a team that was worried about shooting, they got one of the best shooters ever. So I really just think in the regular season, they're just going to pile up wins, and they're going to limit what they need Zion and Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball to do, because they have the talent around them to really not demand that they be amazing players right away.
Yeah, just to recap real quick for you guys, really, Brennan and I almost had the exact same for the West there, and the only flip-flop was Portland in for me, and Portland's out for Brennan and put in New Orleans. So it was pretty much the same there as far as that goes. Before we go on to the Eastern Conference, I want to cover them really quickly about Peloton. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED, L-O-C-K-E-D, to get started. All right, Brent, on to the Eastern Conference here. And this might be a hot take. I don't know about you. Just I think this team, I mean, obviously the Kawhi regression is going to happen, of course. So they're not my one seed, but for the one seed here, I think a lot of people are expecting Milwaukee to stay the same, but I think Malcolm Brogdon is a big loss for the Bucks. So I'm going to go Philadelphia as my one seed.
Yeah, I have Philadelphia, Milwaukee 1-2 as well. I think Philadelphia, maybe regular season-wise, like I don't know if they are going to be a better team, but I agree with you that I think, you know, Milwaukee will take a slight step back and won't be the juggernaut that we saw last year, blowing out teams and really putting together a historically great regular season before running into challenges against Toronto. So it's going to be neck and neck. And I think both of these teams will have a really high win total just because the rest of the conference is not very good. And you could even say got a little bit worse. So it's going to be one of those two for the top seed for sure. But I think three is where things get interesting, because I think those two are pretty much locks if they're healthy. But where do you think the three seed ends up here?
Yeah, for the 76ers and Bucks, like you mentioned, there are, I think they're clear 1 and 2 here. But for me, I'm betting on Pascal Siakam. I'm betting on Kyle Lowry and just that continuity from the Raptors, the title winners from this past year. I think people just forget at this point since Kawhi left that they won the NBA championship. But Toronto Raptors are my three seed. How about you?
I really struggle with Toronto. I feel like I'm underestimating them, but at the same time, when you think about health and just getting out of bed to compete on a nightly basis with how much of their roster is based around older players contributing at a high level, I don't have them even in getting home court advantage in the first round. They're out of my top four. I have Boston at number three. I have a lot of concerns about their front court. They're going to play very small, and if you play very small, I'd prefer you have a defensive center to help you out in, you know, starting lineup and throughout the regular season. They don't even have that, so they're just going to be very defensively challenged. But I trust their depth, and I trust Kemba and some of their other pieces, Hayward, Tatum, Brown, to just rack up wins there. So I have them at three.
Okay, yeah, we're almost on the same page there. I have Boston here a couple seeds down below, but for number four, I have the Indiana Pacers. I know they're going to miss Oladipo the first few months of the season. I think he's scheduled to come back around Christmas time or in January. But I think I'm a big fan of Malcolm Brogdon. I think we were both pounding the table for him as an option for the Suns in free agency if that was possible. He got a sign and trade through the division rival, which surprised me to the Pacers there. But I think Brogdon's going to help ride the ship there. They made a good move to get Jeremy Lamb as well, TJ Warren, just these underrated guys that I really like. TJ, I think, is going to do well in Indiana, especially. We talked about before, but his fit alongside Miles Turner is a lot better than I think we all want to talk about here. Just, I think he's going to be maximized more often in that system in Indiana. I think fits him a lot better than Phoenix will. So I have the Pacers as of the four seed. Once Oladipo is back, I think we're going to be humming at full steam. I think they're a legit contender in the Eastern Conference if Oladipo and Brogdon are meshing well together. Because that those two, once they're fully healthy together, that's a terrifying defensive combination in a backcourt.
Yeah, I think their defense could be really good. I'm not really worried at all about the defense. I think the offense is going to be a question, just as it always has been, really. I mean, they have Sabonis and Turner starting there, and you know, I believe TJ Warren can be impactful, but we really haven't seen him do that on a good team. I don't really know what position he plays. I don't know how Jeremy Lamb fits in. I just want to kind of see it, and I really want to see it, especially after Oladipo comes back. I have them five. I have Brooklyn four. I think, you know, we don't really need to say much about Brooklyn because it's mostly the same team, just some depth pieces that are different. And then obviously the inclusion of Kyrie Irving, I think, is enough for me to believe that they can rise up a little bit in the standings as the conference around them gets a little worse. So I have Nets, Pacers, Raptors. So Toronto's six for me, which I found surprising, but I kind of already explained myself there, just thinking Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol and guys like that are going to rack up regular season wins. I just think that's not really their focus at this point in their careers. And, you know, Pascal Siakam taking a leap could change that, but that's kind of how I see things shaking out. But from three to six, it's even seven, honestly. It's, you could convince me anything happens, honestly.
No, I agree with you there as well. I think for me, after four, it's the Celtics at five. I just don't trust the Celtics right now, especially after, I know maybe it's unfair to say this, but the FIBA World Cup had a lot of Celtics on it, and they struggle with that. I just think Enes Kanter at center especially, that really terrifies me as far as what they're going to do there. They're going to play super small ball instead. That's something to watch for there. So I had the Celtics at five. Then I had the Nets at six. I think Kyrie Irving's going to have an adjustment period there in Brooklyn. He's going to put up huge box score numbers, I think, because it'll just be his show to run there for a year until Kevin Durant's back. But I think there will also be an adjustment for Brooklyn there. So I have them as my five and my six. Then if you want to go to seven here, Brendan, I have the Miami Heat. I almost forgot about them at first because I keep forgetting that Jimmy Butler went to the Miami Heat. So I have them at number seven overall.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler and Myers Leonard. You forgot about Myers Leonard. No, I agree. I mean, Miami is tough for me just to kind of envision what it's going to look like. I don't think it's hard. We know what Heat teams look like, how they play, and you know they're going to be good on defense for the most part. And adding Jimmy Butler is definitely not going to make you worse on defense. So I think we can trust them there. But just the offense, and it's another team that relies on older players between Jimmy and even Goran Dragic now as well. And their center situation is a little scary too with, I guess they have Bam, but behind him in the front court, you got just a bunch of offense first players that are going to make it tough on a nightly basis to defend. That's asking a lot of a young player, not a bio. So I have him eight. I actually have Orlando seven. So I really actually almost put Toronto seven and Orlando six just to completely insult the defending champions even more here. But Orlando again almost reminds me of kind of the Nuggets, not nearly the high level because they don't have a player like Nikola Jokic, but I just really think between Steve Clifford's coaching job and those veteran pieces mostly entirely coming back here, and they added Alfred Camino, which who knows what he even provides on a team with so many fours already, but they're just going to rack up wins. I think they come to play. They compete in every game. Their defense got a lot better last year. Nikola Vucevic is going to be a 20 and 10 guy until, you know, further notice here. So what, did you have Orlando 8 or did you go outside of this?
Yeah, this might shock you, Brian. It might shock the listeners here, but I'm predicting there's just one team always in the NBA that shocks people and really takes a big leap. And for this, I'm going Atlanta at 8. I think Trae Young is going to have monster season. I think that he's going to put up a huge season as far as like maybe 26 points per game, 7-8 assists. John Collins will take a step forward. I like the rookies they brought in, Hunter and Reddish. I also like Lloyd Pierce. I think he's a really underrated head coach who did really well for them last year. I think this is a very bold claim to say, but I think Trae Young's a top 3-point guard in the East by the end of the season.
I mean, sure, it's definitely the East is ready for something like that to happen because none of the teams at the bottom really excite you. I think, you know, if Jimmy gets hurt, if that Heat team doesn't really come together like we're expecting, they're a really old team for the most part. The Magic, you know, maybe this is the year they finally start to make some of those trades we've all been expecting, whether that's Aaron Gordon or whomever becomes available there, Jonathan Isaac, who knows. I don't think it's unlikely. I just think they're really going to struggle to defend. That's just a core problem to the way that entire roster has been constructed is I wonder if they can defend worth a lick. So it's not – you're not like the only one saying that either. So it definitely could happen.
Yeah, I think them and Orlando, I was tough just because I think Orlando's continuity, that's a big thing that I think I'm overlooking here. But I'm just so in on Trae Young at this point that I had to make a gamble here. And I think – Orlando is one of those teams that could really bite me in this prediction here because I think you could be right, Brent. Just the continuity. You add in maybe Jonathan Isaac taking a leap. I think he's poised for one of those, I think, really soon. So I think Orlando is a really good team, but I think there's a legit 8 or 9 good teams in the Eastern Conference. And then after that, though.
The Pistons. We didn't even mention the Pistons who made the playoffs last year.
I think you know what that means, right, for the Pistons? I think that means that Blake Griffin's going to ask for a trade after this year.
I was just, the way that I factored that in was I feel like maybe this is just the season where they finally, kind of like what I said might happen with Orlando, we've all been kind of wondering, like, what gives here? I think Detroit might start to kind of break things down a little bit. I mean, that sucks. It's really unfortunate when that time comes for a small market team, but I just think, you know what, we even if we assume everything went well for them, we were not considering, I wasn't at least, I really doubt you were, considering them as a top 4 candidate here. It's not like they have much room to get better. So you got to start thinking about when it's time to maybe take a step back and get a little worse to protect yourself for the future. So I kind of agreed with you. I thought maybe even just in season, this was the year, whether it's Drummond, whether it's Blake, that they start to make some moves. I wanted to say though, while we're on the topic of Orlando, came out this week that they picked up Markelle Fultz's 4th-year option, which maybe was expected when they traded for him, but still is a very expensive salary. And this, we've seen the Suns decline a lot of their players. I guess just what it says to you that they still picked up his option when we've seen the Suns do the opposite, but also do you have any – does it – as we kind of think about Fultz and what's next for him, like, does it make you feel any more like the Suns should have been more in on that than they were?
Personally, the farther we get away from that, I was a fan of the Fultz acquisition back then because, I mean, we were talking about back then. I don't think we ever expected Ricky Rubio to be a Suns point guard. I think we were expecting him maybe to be like a younger option or maybe even a player that we really didn't want on the team. But I think Rubio is a great fit here. I think just Markelle Fultz, that's just a really big risk, and especially for the Suns, where they're a team that has to make some progress this year. If Markelle Fultz just like sinks the ship, so to say, he doesn't improve and his shot's still dead, that's a really bad look for the organization, in my opinion. I feel bad for Markelle Fultz in that situation because I think it's just too much unneeded pressure on a guy like him. I think Orlando's a good spot for Fultz because he has DJ Augustine there for another year. Then maybe he can get the starting role in 2020, 2021. I think there's a good insulation there for Orlando that wouldn't be there right now in Phoenix for him.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think it's a good point to make that they probably were not in position to be bringing in another long shot project type of player like they did, like Orlando did. Phoenix was not in that position. They were kind of trying to pivot away from players like that. So it probably wasn't a fit, but it did just get me thinking all over again about what could have been there if they had really negotiated that out, because it didn't cost a lot. It was a fake first round pick that now it's the Thunder's first this year top 20 protected. So or I think it's reverse protected, actually. They get it if it's 20 to 30. the Sixers do, and it doesn't look like the Thunder are going to be picking 20 to 30, so they won't get it, and it converts to 2 seconds. So it really was not much at all to give up there, and if he is even anything, then that's a pretty good trade. So I was just thinking it really would have just been a substitute for Tyler Johnson here with the Suns, but it didn't end up working out, and I think that's totally okay. As you said, Rubio is a much more valuable piece to acquire with that money, and they didn't have to trade for him. But before we let's talk about the cellar dwellers here in the last segment. Go quickly kind of through where we see the lottery here shaking out the bottom of the league. Before we do that, though, make sure you have subscribed to our show. If you're listening at Bright Side of the Sun, or if you are just finding our show for the first time, go ahead and click that subscribe button wherever you're listening, and give us a rating and review. It helps a lot, gets a little more eyeballs on our show, and we appreciate the support there. And check out the Locked On NBA show, our national show here on the network, to keep up with everything going on across the league as we get ready for the 2019-20 season. So who do you think gets the number one pick? I haven't really spent a ton of time thinking about it. There's people who are kind of throwing out early mock drafts for 2020 as the season approaches, college season approaching, obviously a little bit even sooner than the NBA season. But who do you think's the worst team in the league this year?
Terry Rozier and the Charlotte Hornets, come on down. That's who I'm going with. I think they're going to be really, really bad.
Yeah, that's probably where I would go, just because I think the Wizards would be a pick, but Beal is just a very good player. I have a hard time. They were pretty bad last year, and he still helped them win some games they probably shouldn't have been winning. So, yeah, that might be it. I think Memphis has a claim there. I think Memphis could be pretty bad intentionally, even though they're promising, very, very promising for the future. I just think even if they let their young guys play, they're not going to be impactful in year one. So they would be another contender for me. Danny LaRue, actually, on the Dunked On pod that I hadn't listened in a while, and I tuned in for they were going through the extension candidates this summer, talked a little bit about Dario Saric, so I was tuning in there. They made the point with the Hornets that they really kicked themselves in the foot there by getting Rozier, because think about, we've already been talking about it from a Suns perspective, that this lottery has a lot of point guard candidates that could fill that slot for the Suns long term. The Hornets really should be looking at those guys, but now they have a guy they're paying almost $20 million the next three seasons, filling up that hole for them. It's even more of a mistake when you think of it from that perspective.
Yeah, especially, and it's incredible we're saying this, and thank Michael Jordan for this, I guess, because, I mean, we've had multiple reports suggest that the Suns were going to get Terry Rozier if not for Michael Jordan stepping in there. But Ricky Rubio making $17 million, but Terry Rozier making almost $18, $19 million per year is just unfathomable, man.
It is. It definitely is. Who do you think is the best non-playoff team that's just on the cusp? You had Dallas and Detroit were the two on the outside for each conference for you. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I had Orlando at 9 for mine.
Orlando, yeah.
Yeah, Detroit at 10 or 11, I believe. But I'm going to go with, for that, it's tough. I'm really buying in. I know Suns fans aren't going to like me saying this, but I think Dallas is going to take a big leap this year. Luka looks a lot physically better than he did at Real Madrid and in year one his rookie year. Looks like he's getting chiseled up a little bit. I think I'm buying Kristaps as well. As far as just this year, he looks like he's also taking a leap physically. But that's the thing. It's a huge question mark for him. But the other pieces around them, I like Jalen Brunson. I think he's a really good player for them. I think Tim Hardaway actually fits there, but way better than I think he thought originally. And then outside of that, though, like we mentioned, there's not a lot there. I just like just the star potential of Luka and Kristaps more than I do Orlando. So I would say Dallas there.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be it's Portland, just because I can't knock them down any more than I already have. I feel bad for the conference finalists being out of the playoffs already here, but the Mario Hezonja Rodney Hood show does not excite me, so I stand by that. But I think they'll be right there at number 14, which, you know, I mean, maybe that causes them to overreact, but that's not a franchise that's made panic moves in the past. This year without Nurkic might just be an opportunity to reset for them. They get a good player in the lottery, and then they're back there next time, in 2020-21. Lillard just signed an extension. This is not a franchise on the brink of collapse by any means. So I think I have them there. When you kind of look at it from the perspective of a lot of West teams that project to be better than the Suns, even if the Suns do take a step up and beat up on the East a little bit and become a better home team like we talked about. We also have the Kings right there. You said Dallas. You know, there's a lot of good West teams, and the East has a few that are going to be on the outside looking in that I think will be better than the Suns, Detroit, Orlando, whoever you kind of have right there. Does that still kind of make you feel like the Suns will be somewhere in that 8, 9, 10 range in the lottery if they win as many games as we expect them to?
Yeah, exactly. You're on that same page as me, Brent. I think 30 to 34 wins might get you like 8 or 9 in the lottery standings, and that could be good, though. I mean, we saw the Pelicans, I think, jump from 7 or 8 to number 1 spot, so maybe they get the luck that the Pelicans got this year. But I think for me, I'm looking at my Western Conference standings again right now. I have the Thunder right ahead of them because I think they're going to keep Chris Paul and Danilo Gallinari around until the deadline at least, and they're going to create some separation there. I have the Suns in my 13th seed in the Western Conference ahead of Minnesota and Memphis. But then I think they're a lot better than the bottom teams in the Eastern Conference, like Charlotte, Cleveland, Washington, even New York. I'd put the Suns ahead of those teams as well. So I think 7 or 8 makes a lot of sense in the reverse standings for the Suns.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that'll be a pleasant difference come June, right? I mean, we'll still be talking heavily about the draft in Phoenix here, but it won't be the end-all be-all. We'll have a lot more positive vibes about the guys on the roster than we do just trying to imagine how the next number one pick might fit with the Suns. So I'm definitely excited about that possibility, and I think that's probably right around where they will end up. I just think there's a lot of teams, like, forget how you think the Suns might do record-wise or go through it however you want. I just think there's a lot of teams this year for the first time in a while that I feel like are certainly worse than the Suns, which, you know, in the past there was really no team you could say would for sure be worse than the Suns. Now, with so much veteran talent and everything, it just really feels like, you know, we went through them all, but Charlotte, Cleveland, New York, Washington, Memphis, that's a sampling right there of a handful of teams that I'm pretty positive will be worse than Phoenix. So that makes me feel better. And there's also Detroit, Oklahoma City, some teams that could make trades and get themselves there. So this really feels like an 8-9-10 finisher. And looking quickly, it looks like UpRocks put up a 2020 mock draft. 8-9-10 range. They have the Suns at 4, which feels kind of ridiculous to me, but maybe they're using some sort of predictor statistically. But they have, let's see, RJ Hampton, who's playing over in Australia as a guard. They have him going at 11. They have Tyrese Maxey, another guard at Kentucky, going 10. So there's a ton of talent at the guard spot in this draft, just to keep reiterating that for people who are worried that this is the one draft in years where there are guards and the Suns will not be near the top of it. I think we'll have plenty to talk about come that time of year with the Suns having an opportunity to get their point guard of the future after Rubio's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a fun exercise though, Bernie. We went through both the West and the East here, and it kind of shows you how deep the NBA is now. I don't know if we're in a golden age, so to say, but I think the modern era might be, just because there's so many good teams now. The bottom
of the West, for sure.
Yeah, the West especially. Like, there is a legit 6 or 7 teams that could make a lot of noise this year in the West. And that's not good news for the Suns, so to say, but I think just looking ahead long term, it's a good thing to have the NBA back where it is right now, because I think it's the most entertaining we've had in a very long time. But that does for today's episode, guys. We'll be back with you guys on Monday as we go over our awards ceremony for the NBA this year.